Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Big Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, you know what Tara Reid says. I'm back on my way to L.A. Can't wait to see my amazing boyfriend at Infected Mushroom. Erez, here I come.
God, just... She's dating someone named Infected Mushroom?
I think it's a band. It's at Infected, but then she throws Mushroom in there. Yeah, there's a band, Infected Mushroom. I don't know if she's... I don't know if that's one person. I don't know if she's dating the entire band. Or just someone in the band. I don't know much about it, but I do know that five days from now, I'll still get explanations of who they are from people that listen to the podcast.
Who's in better standing today, Tara Reid or Miley Cyrus?
I don't understand the whole Miley Cyrus thing. Like, people are mad at her because she acts like a, just fill in the word there. I don't concern myself with her, so I just don't really care. I've gotten, this is how I know it's late August. I am in full on, I just don't care mode. Every topic of conversation is just annoying the hell out of me.
Yeah, I'm September 1st. I'm, that's when I gave myself September 1st. I get to be excited about the season. That's a month. And it's kind of 2 months, but it's like a month to training camp. It's 2 months to the start of the season. So I'm willing to get excited starting September 1st. It's a deal I made with my wife. The Cyrus thing is I think it's more of just shock. Just, wow, this is Hannah Montana and she's, you know, twerking with Robin Thicke. I think that's the –
Yeah, I mean, I'm more upset that Robin Thicke is a thing, if to be honest with you, than I am that Miley was twerking.
I don't know. He's Alan Thicke's son, which kind of makes everything okay to me, just because of how absurd that is. Like, Alan Thicke's son is this guy that did Blurred Lines. This to me is...
I have a problem, though, that he sued Marvin Gaye's family, or he is suing Marvin Gaye's family, before they had a chance to sue him over Blurred Lines. This is just... That's the ultimate, like, 8 Mile kind of attack, is suing someone before they sue you, even though they have the right to apparently sue you.
It's about basketball.
Oh, yeah. It's August, so there must be a lot of basketball to talk about.
Do you want to start with our Hall of Famers that have retired, or do you want to start with the Heat?
Since we're on the topic of things that annoy me, we're going to go Hall of Famers that retired.
Okay, I'm going to make a sandwich. You go ahead.
Okay. Don't forget to cut the crust off. Here's the thing that really bothers me. Allen Iverson retires, I don't know, last week? It's within the same week that he and Tracy McGrady have retired. But Allen Iverson retires last week, and people are like, oh my God, I can't believe he's retired. I'm thinking, he hasn't played since like 2009, 2010. And he hasn't played well since, I don't know, 07, 08? Like, this is Allen Iverson retiring, quote-unquote, but he's been gone for years. I mean, we have a new collective bargaining agreement since the last time he played. That's how long he's been gone. LeBron James has two titles when people were wondering if he can win any of them. And Iverson's been gone that entire time. So I guess it's sad that, like, I'm more sad about, like, the personal stuff he's gone through. Not that I feel bad for him necessarily, but it's just a crappy situation. But even then, like, I don't have anything interesting to say about that. So it's not a shock to me that he retired. I honestly thought he was retired. So this is nothing new to me. And then Trace McGrady retires today. T-Mac has been gone for a long time. I know he was on the Hawks recently, and he was on the Spurs this last year and went to the finals, or, you know, he was kind of doing that hoverboard thing in Back to the Future 2, where he's just holding on to the back of the truck as they went to the finals. But regardless, he was in the finals. Trace McGrady was in the finals. T-Mac has been gone for years. And so T-Mac and Iverson are, like, the topic of discussion today, and, you know, is T-Mac a Hall of Famer and all this stuff. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, 5 years from now, when he's eligible for the Hall of Fame, that's when it's time to discuss whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. Yelling at everybody now and saying, actually, you know, from 2002 to 2005, he was better than Kobe Bryant. One, no, he wasn't. Two, I think he was at times as good as anybody, but that doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. And the only thing that makes you a Hall of Famer is if you get voted into the Hall of Fame. That is the only thing that makes you a Hall of Famer. If you don't get voted in, you're not a Hall of Famer. And so I don't know why the discussion just annoyed the hell out of me today, but it just seemed like this weird thing for everyone to concentrate on. Maybe it's because it's August, but let's read a book. We don't have to discuss the littlest news in this really aggressive, like, you're an idiot if you don't feel this way about Tracy McGrady being a Hall of Famer. Like, who cares? I'm reading a fantastic book on hijacking airplanes in the 60s and 70s, and it was like this epidemic. Let's talk about that.
But, I mean...
What kind of sandwich did you make?
I made a ham sandwich. I did make it in the time that it took you to finish.
No, I could hear you. It was great.
It's good, too. It's a tasty sandwich. I mean, one, I'm not going to complain about people wanting to talk about basketball because it pays our bills. And two, like, I don't know. I think it's okay for people to talk about it. Now, I think it should be okay for you to not talk about it. Like, you're choosing to read books and yes. do things that are not related to your job and enjoy the 1 month in which nothing happens. Nothing right. happens this month. And that's fine. But I think it's okay. Like, my advice would be just, like, don't get on Twitter, man. Stay off Twitter. Like, well, don't go.
I stayed off Twitter because I didn't watch Breaking Bad until about 10 this morning. And so I didn't want to see anything. I didn't want to see anything about last night's episode. I didn't watch it last night because we're catching my lady friend up. We're about halfway through season 3 now for her. So she'll be caught up way before the last episode. But so I, out of respect for her, we kept watching season 3. And I just said, I'll watch in the morning. And so I watched about 10 a.m. this morning. So I was off Twitter for a long time. I missed like the T-Mac announcement, I guess, if you want to call it that. And so when I got on, it was just this wave of like, where do you rank Tracy McGrady all time? Like, I don't know. Like you and I joked about this. I've never stopped to think about where he ranks all time. I just never have. I probably never will. Because I don't like rank. Like I could rank Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as the second greatest player of all time. And someone could rank Magic Johnson as the second greatest player of all time. And they mean about the same. Like those respective rankings, they mean about the same, which is just about nothing.
I think it's, you can give credit. I think it's good to give credit to people. Like, I liked the discussion about T-Mac this morning because I liked thinking about 2003 when he was amazing. That was a great year. That's all I really want to do is be like, hey, he was really awesome. Like, let's remember when he was really awesome. I gave him a world of crap from his Rockets years.
You did.
I gave him a constant.
Okay, this is something I'm fine with. I don't mind, like, celebrating the guy.
Yeah.
I'm fine celebrating. It's just this nitpicking of like, well, he wasn't a defender and he wasn't this, but he didn't get out of the first round. Like, who cares?
Yeah. Like,
that's the problem.
Part of it also is, and I'm not trying to denigrate the Hall of Fame because, I think it was Ethan that said this morning about how, like, it's patently ridiculous. Like, the entire conversation is absurd because the Hall is pretty messed up. And I've talked about this. I've written about this. I'm on the Bill Simmons train of, like, I don't understand why the league doesn't have its own. I don't understand it at all.
The section of his book, I mean, I enjoy, like, some people dislike him. Like, I enjoy his whole book of basketball, but the Hall of Fame section is just fantastic.
Yeah, and he's got a really good idea. Like, the pyramid idea actually is really smart. It's gimmicky, but that's the point. It's a Hall of Fame. Like, right. It should be really...
Hall of Fames are gimmicky.
Yeah, it's a gimmick. So, I'm on board with the whole idea of there's no reason why the league shouldn't have its own. I think you can have the Naismith Hall of Fame and then have the NBA Hall of Fame. It's been around now for long enough to where you have enough history to celebrate. It would give us an opportunity. And I think that, and you could throw more money at it and they can make money. The owners love making money. Make some money. And the idea is, well, you won't make enough, but we'll do it right. Like, figure out corporate sponsorships. Squeeze some more money out of your television partners. That doesn't seem to be difficult for you. Like, bleed the players some more. Figure out a way to do it. Because I think I like the idea of appreciating the fact that these are the greatest athletes in the world and taking the time to kind of notice that. Because, like with Tracy, I went off this morning on some guys about saying that he wasn't, just because it's kind of like my bigger argument actually isn't that Tracy McGrady is definitely a Hall of Famer. It's that you don't know. You don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
That's the thing I like us admitting. I like he could be, he couldn't be. Like, we don't know.
Like, Reggie Miller took, a little bit to get in there. Bernard King took forever to get in there. There's guys that are great that haven't made it in yet. Bill Fitch is in the Hall of Famer. That's ridiculous. But that's my opinion. And it's okay for you to have a different opinion. And if you want to discuss it, we can. But I get where you're coming from on the whole, why is there this outrage over everything? That's kind of curious. Like, even a good friend of mine, Curtis Harris, Pro Hoops History, is like very viral, like just very worked up over the idea of anyone saying that Tracy McGrady's not a Hall of Famer. And I'm kind of like, it doesn't really matter. I don't care if you don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I do. That's kind of the end of the conversation. Like, I think he should be in. You don't. We'll see if he gets in. Thanks for coming. I think there's room for discussion, and it makes for good conversations. And yeah, it's August. I don't mind talking about it, because there's people that are always going to want to talk about basketball no matter when it is. And I'm probably one of those people, because I've chosen to focus my life around it. I mean, I'm reading like a bunch of different books right now as well, and like catching up on television and Hell on Wheels and all these kind of things. But I'm also, I don't know, I guess it's – basketball was always, to me, it became something for me to keep my brain working on, so that it wasn't just spinning constantly trying to devour everything in front of it. And so I don't mind these conversations, because to me it's like I don't mind running on a hamster wheel for a while. It's just a couple hours of my day to have something in the back of my mind. Like I took my kid to the park today, and we were hanging out and swinging, and while I'm pushing him and he's laughing, I'm enjoying being with him. But I was also like, when we're walking, I'm thinking like, I was thinking about like, where would I put McGrady in terms of where would he be in like today's hierarchy? I was like, that's kind of an interesting question, like 2003 era. And they don't mean anything. That's the big key here. None of this means anything. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
There's no reason to get worked up about it, because nothing means anything. There's your nihilist sandwich conversation. I guess here's a question. While it's totally okay for you and I to disagree and it doesn't mean anything, do you think Allen Iverson should be in the Hall of Fame? Would you be happy if you heard Allen Iverson is in the Hall of Fame?
Allen Iverson would be in my NBA and or basketball Hall of Fame.
Okay.
He would absolutely be in. Like, for me, that's a no-brainer. I get if somebody says he's not, but I think he was – whether the era was good or it was bad or it was ugly or it was, you know, or it was great, like, he – kind of dominated an era in a way that we've never seen before, and his cultural impact was so great for the game of basketball. And that's the thing, I think people forget that it's not just about like scoring averages and shooting percentages and all-star appearances and all this stuff. Like, I think impact on the game matters, and his impact on the game was incredible. Like, just absolutely incredible. And he was just like, he was really good. He was one of the best scorers we've ever seen. Was he one of the most efficient scorers we've ever seen? No, but he's one of the best.
Jordan was the face of the league from 1991 to 1998. Shaq was the face of the league from 1998 to 2001. Kobe was the face of the league from about 2004 to 2008.
Eight, yeah.
In that middle gap, it was Allen Iverson. He was the face of the league.
And he was. I'd even argue, like, you could put him up there with 98, 99, 2000 against Shaq as the face of the league. I mean, he was nipping at his heels, not in terms of, like, how good the two players were. Like, Shaq was obviously better and more impactful on the court. But, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but they literally designed a team around him saying, we're going to be the best defensive team in the league, and he's going to take 27 shots a game. And that's how we're going to win. And they made the finals in, what, 2000, 2001? Like, that's a crazy – if you did that today and say, like, they're obviously not as good. But if you handed over the reins to Monte Ellis today and said, Monte, 27 shots a game, we're going to give you the best defense in the league, go take us to the finals, that would never happen.
That you know of.
Sure, that I know of. I mean, Monte have it all. But I just don't know that – I think Allen Iverson had more.
Pound for pound.
That's okay. That I don't like. I don't like this pound for pound crap. I don't know what that means.
I have to get a drink. Can you go off on that again?
Yeah, I'll go on that. Pound for pound doesn't mean anything to me. It's just a way of saying nice things about small players. I guess pound for pound, Muggsy Bogues is the greatest player of all time. What was he, 110 pounds? I don't know how tall or how much like 5'3" people weigh. He might have been 130. 140 of all, like, he was all muscle, but like, he had gigantic thighs. Muggsy Bogues' quads should be in the Hall of Fame. I'll say that. That guy had massive quads. But pound for pound, like, what is that? It just means, like, this small guy is okay with getting hit. That's all that means.
Muggsy weighed 136 pounds.
Woo!
Basketball reference.
I would guarantee 46 of that, quads.
46 pounds of quads.
Yep.
That should be in the title of the podcast. 46 pounds of quads. Miami Heat offseason report. It's weird because I was just thinking about that, about the kind of the face of the league and how Tim Duncan has never been the face of the league. I would not say that, because he never made that kind of cultural impact.
Maybe,
and he didn't want to, and that's okay.
Yeah, maybe you could argue 2003 was between Iverson, Duncan, Kobe, and Kobe and Shaq together because there was that whole feud and whatever.
I think you could argue. I think you have to want the attention. Like, in order to be the face of the league, you have to want to be that face. I think that's a requirement.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's okay. Like, Spurs fans can be upset about it, but that was his choice. Like, Tim could have been a bigger – like, he could have had his face on magazines and been this big deal, and he never wanted that. And that's something really admirable about him, but it doesn't mean that not doing that is any worse. It also means that there's consequences.
Well, we talked
about that during the finals.
You know what's funny is, people, like, kind of laud that as – like, oh, he never wanted the attention. He's so humble. He's so down to earth. Like, what if it was just like some kind of anxiety disorder keeping him back, or some kind of social disorder that was keeping him from wanting that? Like, we don't actually know the reason. We think it's just because he's a good guy and he cares about team and all that. But, like, what if it was just like something where he's like, I cannot handle this kind of attention?
I don't want attention. I'm an egomaniac.
Right.
I have 200,000 tweets and don't want attention, so I don't know what we're talking about here. Yeah, it's kind of a weird perception of humility.
Yeah.
Tracy McGrady in 2003 was awful good.
He was, I'd say he was in the top 100 players in the league then. Minimum.
Easily.
At worst, he's in the top 100.
I'm doing this project, which I don't want to reveal the details of, and I'm looking at seasons over the last... since 2004, and obviously 2003, McGrady falls behind that. But it's interesting looking at the idea of how much do you try and classify made his teammates better is a big thing that's stuck in my head because we don't have a metric for it.
Right.
You can have assist rate, but that does not mean there are players, and you talked about this, about players that draw attention of the defense – and that gives everyone else opportunities. I think Dwight Howard with the Magic is a great example of that.
Yeah.
And where you fall on you shoot too much versus you draw attention away from your teammates that's like a delicate line, I think, to walk, and that kind of determines your value. But it's interesting to look at. McGrady really did. He made his teammates better. That's how bad that Magic team was.
If you think about it, like – This isn't like a legendary number, but when you think about how many times he shot, he had a true shooting percentage of 56.4% that year, and he was taking like, what did he take, like 22 shots a game? 24 shots a game, and to have that kind of true shooting percentage on that many shots, that's a little bit of all right.
Pat Garrity was the second leading scorer on that team.
Oh, Pat Garrity, he had his time as the face of the league.
That's total points. Points per game was Mike Miller. Gordon Giricek was fourth in points per game for that team. I mean, seriously, look at this. I completely forgot that Sean Kemp was on that team.
Oh, yeah. That was not an in-shape Sean Kemp.
You don't say.
No, that was Jabba the Kemp.
I read an interview with him today on Dime, talking about dunks and kind of the era and everything. It was kind of interesting. It was also kind of nice for him to be kind of honest about his struggles and how much, like, the problems that he's gone through. And of course, he always makes it sound like they're. I don't like it when everyone talks about, oh, I've really gone through a lot. And it's like, well, you put yourself through a lot. Like, ooh, I want to talk to you about this though. Speaking of fat,
this ought to be good.
So, I saw it's James Harden's birthday. Okay. So everyone's tweeting photos of James Harden. Like, all these players are tweeting photos. Like, apparently he and Kenya Martin are friends. Like, Kenya Martin called him the little bro, and Kenya Martin calls everyone little bro, but it just thought it was kind of interesting. But who was it? Some player, I forget who, somebody posted a photo of him, and it's like, it was Austin Day, and Harden's sitting in front, and I put it in Campfire, I don't know if you saw it or not, but he looks... I'd always kind of thought this. He's got a really wide chest. Like, as Harden gets
older, his
chest keeps getting wider. And I realized if he lets himself go just a little bit, Harden's going to get fat quick.
Oh, he'll be like Charles Barkley of like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, they're about the same size.
This photo of him with Austin Day, like, his tight-fitted shirt is kind of bulging around him. And I know this look because that's my look. And so, like... And so I'm just like, with the beard and everything, like, imagine if James Harden, like, let himself, that's why, like, I'm really worried about the next lockout in, like, 2015 or 2016 or whenever. If James Harden lets himself go at that age, and he's got the beard and he's looking big, like, this is going to get out of hand quick.
All right, I have an idea to pitch for after the next lockout. I want 2 weeks of travel. Let's say 3 weeks of travel. It'd have to be, like, 3 weeks. 3 weeks of travel, I want to hit up every single team in some way, and, you know, I'll catch two a night or whatever, and I just want to take pictures and figure out who got the fattest during the lockout. That's my job, and that's going to be my, I don't even know, we'll just have it be its own section on the site. Just a then and now.
We should just call it Whammy Bro or something like that. It'll be like PEDS, like test, instead of test me, it can be like Whammy. Like, I'm going to prove to you that I didn't get fat during the offseason.
Right.
That's what was really...
I'll walk around with a digital scale. Like, just one of those ones that that just, like, gives, like, body fat and all that stuff.
Like, and that. Just be like, you don't have to. No, it's fine. You don't want to. That's okay.
Cool. I'll just write that you declined to be weighed.
I'll just write that you didn't want to be weighed. That's fine.
Yeah. And we'll leave it up. We'll leave it up to the reader to decide.
That's okay. I'm just going to take this photo of you and then... Can you turn sideways? Just real quick. Just sideways. Just for a second. The light. I need a good right angle on it.
I wonder if young NBA players are getting more barrel-chested. And this is the only thing that's making me think of that. Because you mentioned James Harden, and then I immediately thought, oh, Tyreke Evans has a barrel chest. So I know of two players in the league right now who are guards that are barrel-chested. I wonder if that means more are happening.
It could be. But then there's, like, Paul George, who continues to be, like, nothing but... He's like Michael Candy.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Eric Maynard just flat out doesn't have a chest.
Have you seen this photo that Hibbert tweeted with him and Duncan?
Where Roy Hibbert looks like he's about 600 pounds of muscle?
Yeah, I didn't really think that Duncan looked that small. Everyone was having the headline of, like, Roy Hibbert makes Tim Duncan look tiny. And I was like, well, Tim Duncan's kind of, like, leaning over the kids.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, I don't know, he's got, like, 2 or 3 inches on him. And Duncan, like, Duncan is leaning, and he's, like, farther back in the photo. So there's a bit of, like, an optical illusion there. I mean, Roy Hibbert does make Tim Duncan look smaller than, let's say, Paul Millsap makes Tim Duncan look.
Like, Roy Hibbert makes Tim Duncan look smaller than Roy Hibbert.
Right. I mean, Roy Hibbert's, like, one of the biggest human beings on the planet.
But it's funny, though, because I always go back to an assistant coach told me one time that KG was asked who the strongest player in the league was, and KG immediately spat out Duncan. He said immediately, he said Tim Duncan. And they said, really? And he's like, reporter is a tree. That's what he said. So that relates back to Roy Hibbert. See, it's a cycle. And then, but I just think it's interesting because I actually really think that Tim Duncan has some sort of mutant power where he's able to increase his center of gravity. Like, he actually can control the gravity around him, and that's what makes him so strong. He's just unmovable. Unless you're Shane Battier and it's game 7 with 5 seconds left.
Oh, hey, there's a transition.
Oh, I gotta tell you, Spurs fans, I need to go ahead and do this. You're going to have to live with these constant references to game 6 and 7. It was one of the best finals of all time. It was one of the most dramatic endings over the last game in 28 seconds we've ever seen. That shot by Ray Allen, think about how many three-pointers Ray Allen has ever hit. That is the biggest shot of Ray Allen's career. That's how big that shot was.
That's one of the biggest shots in NBA history, not just his career.
You're going to have to deal with everyone talking about this for a long time, and no one thinks that you choked or that – well, okay. Most – humans, non-trollish people, do not believe that you choked. You just lost. However, I will say, I've been reading some Spurs stuff recently. I don't like the idea that, well, the Heat weren't better. Well, no, they were.
Yeah, they
You were really better until game 6 with 28 seconds to go, but that final game in 28 seconds happens to be pretty important.
Yeah.
You can say you were nearly as good, and that's accurate. And I'm down with the idea of that's the way the ball bounces or whatever, but the Heat made a series of plays that were necessary, and they all had the ability to do so. And you still had an opportunity to win. You did not.
I mean, I think the Spurs choked. They were up 5 with 28 seconds left to win the title. I don't think that's just because they choked. I don't think it's like an embarrassing thing necessarily. It happens. It happens a lot. Maybe not in the finals, but it happens a lot. And you've still won 4 championships in the last decade or so. Last 15 years, you won 4 championships. So
can't win them all.
I think you're doing okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I just have it like as a 49er fan. You know, they've won 5 championships. I've seen 4 of them in my life, and so when they played in the Super Bowl last year, like it came down to the maybe the final drive or the second to final drive, and they got close to the end zone. They ended up losing, and people were like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." I was like, "I don't know. That was pretty fun."
Like, that was pretty great.
That was pretty fun. Yeah. Like I know it wasn't as fun to see your team. I mean, they didn't choke it away the same way the Spurs choked away, but you got to a game 7. And all the games were pretty much really fun. Like
there's a blogger for PTR that for poundingtherock.com that has still not seen game 7.
Really?
That's how bad it was for him. Game 6 was so scarring. He never watched game 7. I was like, now you need to separate yourself a little bit. Need to reevaluate some things. Like you should be able to watch that.
That seems extreme to me, but I guess
part of it is the losing is part of it. It really is. I think once you get some perspective, like it really is fun. Like part of it for me, like when the Grizzlies lost that game 2 and the Grizzlies, I'm not nearly as much of a fan of. I've had much more devastating losses as a Chiefs fan. So many to count.
A lot.
But that's just a lot of devastating. But anyway, so when the Grizzlies lost game 2 of that Clippers series behind that Chris Paul shot and I really thought the series was over, that one hurt, but it was like, like this is what sports should be. This should be fun. Like I've seen my kid in NICU on a breath machine, like a respirator.
Yeah.
Everything. And I'm not saying that you can't have perspective and that sports shouldn't feel things. Like you should feel things.
Yeah,
but
no, it's fun to feel those. I think it's even fun to feel the pain sometimes. Like, and yeah. I don't mean that in an emo way. I just think like you were invested in that event. That was cool.
Yeah. Like it's good for it to hurt, but the hurt shouldn't bother you. You should be like, okay, yeah. That's all right.
Yeah. Like a stomach punch doesn't, like, what is it? Bill Simmons has like the levels of losing or whatever, and like a stomach punch is one of them. You don't feel that stomach punch forever. It's a short time, and then you get over it.
You know, and I mean, even Popovich, after game 6, was talking about it. He's like, if that's the worst thing that happens, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, if that's the worst thing that happens to you in your life, you've done so well. It's why I wish he would just talk, because he has so many great things to say. And I wish he wouldn't be such a jackass. So anyway, enough about the Heat's opponent. The Miami Heat had an offseason. They did nothing. There you go.
They did a little bit. You did have the absolute easiest offseason report to write.
Man, schedule just worked out that way. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, all you did was post videos, which was great. It was a genius idea.
Like, how was your season last year? Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, like, what happened in 2013? Well, here's a video of Ray Allen shot. Here's a video of the parade. There we go.
There you go. That's pretty much all you need. Let's start with Oden, and we'll go Oden, Anderson,
Miller. Okay.
Oh, real quick, James Enos, I believe is his name. I incorrectly in the offseason report said that he went to Europe. He went back to Australia.
Oh.
Which should be interesting, really interesting to those fans listening in Australia. And good luck with your NBL season. That's fantastic. You should just know I don't give a damn. Just want to get that out there. I don't care where James Enos went. He's irrelevant to me. It's kind of like Bill Hicks where he says, you're not a person until you're in my phone book. You're not a person until you've logged an NBA minute to me. So,
except for Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, Julius Randle.
Who is definitely – those
the Harrison twins.
Until you have a hoop mix or
– a hoop life mixtape.
A hoop life mixtape. You're not a person.
Basketball, I was talking to my my brother-in-law, who's Australian, and last week, and it's crazy how big NBA is becoming in Australia. I know it's been big for a while. Like, you know, I would put the majority of that on Patty Mills and Lee Ellis from the Basketball Jones. I think those are the two reasons it's so big. But it's like, you know, I think we could see maybe 10 years from now, we could see like kind of a Canada surge in basketball talent. Like, it's getting there.
You know, it's interesting. I did a post this morning. The NBA is putting a lot of chips into India.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they worked their way into China, and now they're going into India. And you look at, you know, the Europeans and how much they're providing NBA talent.
It's like a game of Risk.
Right? Don't get involved in the land war in Asia. But the NFL, I don't think, is ever going to have the kind of crossover appeal globally that the NBA has.
Yeah.
And it may never get to be as big as soccer or football.
Football.
But I think that the NBA could have more of a global impact as a game, because this is like the – it's the EPL. It's the best league on the planet. And from that perspective, when you see the interest that's there – everyone talks about the logistics. When you look at the interest that's there globally, you start to understand a little bit more of why Stern wants those international teams.
Yeah.
You start to go, you know, this. I don't blame them. Like, I would rather they just set up an NBA Europe and have those teams play, and then if they get good enough, you can have some interleague play and kind of match them up and kind of go from there. I think there's a lot of potential there for NBA to be a truly global game, and because – you can play basketball anywhere you got a building with two posts.
I think that it's hard because we have so much to do throughout a regular season. There's so much to pay attention to. But whenever I can watch a EuroLeague game online, I do it because it's fun. Like, it's really, really good basketball. Like, I would watch European basketball over college basketball, except for the games that are on CBS. On the weekends.
Which are fantastic.
And the tournament. I would watch that any day because it's really fun. And one of the things I absolutely am making sure I do throughout my most likely brief career is I am going to go watch a game in Lithuania at some point in my life, just because that sounds like the most fun you can have.
Well, I'll try and work that into the budget for next year.
Yeah. I mean, you go to Lawrence, Kansas to check out Andrew Wiggins. I'm going to go check out Šarūnas Jasikevičius if he's still playing in Lithuania right now. I feel like that's doable.
Heat.
Oh, yeah, the Heat. All right, let's
Greg Oden.
Yeah, let's talk Greg Oden.
We're in the same place on this. If he contributes, great. If he doesn't, it's no big deal.
Yeah. Honestly, for me, like, and this is a selfish thing, and it has nothing to do with him, I really like Greg Oden as a player. I think, you know, it's not the extremes that Iverson went through, but you saw there are stories about how, like, Greg Oden kind of didn't deal with the unfulfilled potential that he had very well once the injuries happened, and he kind of, you know, had some demons to battle, and it seems like he's done that. Like, all I want to do is see him step into a real NBA regular season game one more time. I don't even care if he's good on the court. Like, I just want to see him play one more time, and I think it's a success story because that's so hard to do. And outside of that, like, there are no expectations to have with him, good or bad.
It's really weird to me that that these things get made into big deals in terms of his drinking. I got news for you. When I was Greg Oden's age, I had a bigger drinking problem than Greg Oden probably did. I don't know this for a fact. Based on my behavior, I have pretty strong belief that we would have heard about something that happened with him if he had the kind of drinking habits that I had at his age. So
There's only one way to settle this. You guys have to go shot for shot.
Oh, God, that'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic. I would die.
It'd be a totally healthy thing for both of you to do, too.
Yeah, this is great, and it'd be great for the kids. We could put it on CBS.
Exactly.
We could put it as like a featurette on the Super Bowl. It'll be amazing.
Yeah.
The worst part is you would sneak bullet in there and then just start vomiting everywhere.
Greg Oden would be winner by TKO.
God, I just started thinking about that after I had a sandwich too.
That would be good.
Long story. Anyway, it's great. I will say this, and we'll talk about this more next week with the Cavs. So there's been all this news about the Cavaliers from the Cleveland papers, and they're like, you know, maybe it doesn't mean anything, but boy, Andrew Bynum is really working hard. He is in that gym every single day. What? Wow. And I'm always like, oh, okay. And then at the end of it, there's this little line that says, oh, but he's still not ready for basketball activities.
Yeah, that's a little scary.
And I'm like, it's been a year and a half.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, at some point, and it's kind of the same thing with Oden, where it's like, oh my God, like, at what point is he gonna? How long must it go? And I'm not saying, I'm not putting this on him. That's very clear here. I'm not putting this on him. I'm just saying that makes me really concerned for those that are optimistic, because some people get emotionally attached to these things and they start making proclamations. Don't let your heart influence your head where you're like, Greg Oden is going to come back and he's going to be an impact player. Be like, hey, if he does, that'd be really great. I would love to see Greg Oden. But yeah, you can also be like, there are very good reasons to think that that will never happen.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Well, that's how I've kind of just adjusted my own fandom just with like the teams I like, is that I realized like it does me absolutely zero good to like analyze them in a biased way and try to pump them up in my head as more than they are, because that just sets me up for disappointment, right? Like, unless they somehow fulfill that unrealistic expectation, like, it just sets me up for disappointment. So I just try to be as measured as I can, and it's hard because you do get invested, and I am a little emotionally invested in Greg Oden even still to this point, because I do want, like, I just, guys who don't play themselves out of the league, but they just, their body breaks, like, I just feel bad for those guys, because that's not really supposed to be the way, like, a player should either be good enough or not good enough, and that's why they're in or out of the league. And so when a guy is good enough, but his body just keeps breaking down, I start thinking, ugh, this sucks, like, that is not the way that guy should be out of the league. And so that's kind of seeped into Oden. But at the same time, like, I have to think, even though I want him to succeed, you got to be realistic and just think, like, he probably won't get back on the court. If he does, that's awesome. But if he doesn't, like, as long as he's willing to go through the work to keep going, that should really be all that matters, right?
See, I'm on the other side, because you go for the guys that are good enough, they're just broken, and I go for the guys that are certifiably not good enough. I still follow Al Thornton on Twitter.
Oh my god.
And there's still, and every time I see him tweet, there's part of me that's like, you know, like, what if he made like a comeback? Like, there's part of me that will not let go of that Thornton rookie season with the Clippers.
Wasn't he 28 years old when he came into the league?
Something like that. He was like 35. He has his own sitcom on CBS. A big problem. Like, Marcus Thornton is one of my favorites. Like,
yeah, but he's actually good.
Yeah, I love that, Marcus Thornton.
I do have to say, I didn't believe in Marcus Thornton, and I believe I gave you quite a bit of crap about him early on in his career. That dude's legit. You were right about him.
Hold on, I'm going to save this conversation.
Oh, no, I've already edited this out of the podcast.
I'm going to put that on my iPad or my iTunes or my iPhone, and that's all I'm going to run to. That's all I'm going to run to is you saying.
You're just going to make right that. You're going to make that the ringtone for when I text you.
So I can definitely see Oden having a few minutes of like making an impact play in like a second round series, like it's game six and the Heat are getting more of a push than they thought, and then like it's against the Bulls or something, and then all of a sudden like Greg Oden makes a fantastic play and we rip it and it becomes like one of the icons of the playoffs. That'd be really awesome. Like, that'd be fantastic if he was to make one huge block and have like a good solid 5 minutes where he just really swung a game, because guys can do that. I've seen guys make big differences like that in playoff games kind of out of nowhere. And part of me is always like, look, Kenyon Martin played significant minutes last year for the Knicks. It's okay for you to take chances on people.
Right. Like, well, I kind of look at it as like, I think what I more expect is, I don't even expect like a playoff moment with him. I just kind of expect the season Eddie Curry had with the Heat.
Yeah.
You know, he played 14 games, he started one, he played 83 minutes total of the season, and he didn't play in the playoffs at all. And if that happened with Greg Oden this year, I'd feel really good about that for him. Like, it's not the Disney story that everyone wants it to be, but that's an accomplishment.
With Anderson, I mean, do we have any feeling whatsoever about Chris Anderson being re-signed?
Yeah, I think it's a huge move for them. I mean, huge. I talked about this with Roy Hibbert. I think it was either after the first or the second game it was after the first game of the Eastern Conference Finals, and it was when Roy Hibbert had been pulled out of the game in the last play. LeBron gets that layup, you know, hilarity ensues. And I was just asking Roy, I was like, you know, what's different between this year and last year? And he said, Birdman. I said, really? He's like, they didn't have a guy to dump down, or who was cutting the baseline, or who was around the rim that could finish like that last year. He's like, you know, Bosch can do it, but they didn't have that other guy that allows Bosch to space the floor in that way. And he's like, that is such a huge thing for them, because now I have to hesitate when I, you know, in my rotations. Like, I have to worry, is the dump off pass coming? Is the help going to be there? And his, you know, Chris Anderson's not a great player, but in that role and being that guy who can finish at the rim, and he is very good at moving without the ball, it just adds a dynamic that was kind of really needed on that team. And that's why they were so good. I mean, they were obviously good because LeBron is awesome and Bosch is awesome and Wade is awesome. But they were, you know, they went on that run and they were so good to end the season, and they were so good in the playoffs, like, at times, because Chris Anderson was that kind of dump-off valve inside.
In the soap opera of this conversation, Joel Anthony is grimacing and looking away as music plays, violin music plays over
his. He's too nice to grimace.
Is he half smiles? I don't know.
Okay, half smile, I'll go.
Got him back on, you know, he's $1.4 million next year, non-guaranteed $1.4845 the year after. I mean, I agree, it's a big move for them, and it does add that extra dimension. I just find it always notable that whenever things get serious for them, Spoelstra just is like, nope, we're going small.
Oh, yeah. But
seems to work out.
Yeah, I mean, that's their go-to move. It's just, you can throw them out there for 18 minutes and know that it changes one of the best rim protectors in the league from how he attacks. Like, that, a player that is as, you know, Chris Anderson's kind of a crappy basketball player just in terms of skill. Like, you're not going to run a pick and pop with him, you know, like, he's not going to attack off the dribble. Like, he's very limited, but in what he does, he's incredible. And you put a guy like that with LeBron, that's a weapon.
The ability to finish on offensive rebounds is, I think, is a really underrated skill at this point in time.
Completely agree.
It's one of the things that I think when people talk about the center position, and we've talked about, you know, kind of whether or not it's deep or not, and it's getting better once I started looking at it the other day, but I just think that's one of the big problems, is there's so many centers that just, they can't hit a damn tip back. Just, they can't tip it back, and they don't dunk off of it.
Right.
Or they missed. I've seen, how many times last year did I see somebody miss the dunk back? And I'm always like, I just want to scream every time. I'm like,
yeah,
Dwight, you're above the rim. Drop it in.
That just sounds like Dwight Howard all over again.
And we're back there. we should actually talk about that after we get done with this real quick. So, yeah, I think Chris Anderson, great move. Gets him back. They're pretty good. And then the Mike Miller thing, I love Mike Miller. I love the fact that he tries so hard despite the fact that he's broken into tiny pieces. I call him the wince. It's amazing to me that he gives such effort when his body is in such bad shape. But, look, they've got Shane Battier, who, once again, you know, they kind of went away from him. And then they're like, oh, maybe we should use Shane. And Shane really slammed the door on the Spurs. And then they've got Ray Allen. So you've got the shooter. You've got the defender. And they still have the belief that Rashard Lewis is going to contribute for them at some point. Like, Spoelstra's
yeah.
serious about that.
Yeah, he's like very adamant about it.
Yeah, he really thinks that when Rashard Lewis gets healthy, when he's 45, that he's going to contribute effectively. You know, and good on him, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think also, if you look at it from a role standpoint, you've got guys that rebound, and you've got guys that can shoot, and you've got guys that can rebound better than Miller, and guys that can shoot better than Miller. And then Batty is not that guy. You got Ray Allen. You got one guy that can shoot better than Miller. So maybe you don't need the guy that can do a little bit of everything. Maybe you're willing to sacrifice that versatility. They also, I think, probably feel okay with just being like, hey, James, going out there, James Jones, and just.
Yeah, James Jones is an excellent shooter. Like,
he's got, dude.
Yeah, he's only dribbled 8 times in his life, but he can shoot. And you save yourself. I mean, you know, they don't really have to be that cap conscious, but it does save them quite a bit of money to amnesty.
Part of it is, like, if I'm the owner, and I've done this, when I owned a business, there were things that I was willing to spend money on, and there were things that I was like, well, no, like, that's just unnecessary. Let's not. You know, let's cut that. And people liked the things that I would cut, but this is important for me. The money I can save here is noticeable, even if it's, well, it doesn't get you under the cap. Like, that doesn't matter. I'm still saving that money, you know? And I respect organizations that at least take a look at that, because I have very little respect for the teams that are just like, whatever, let's just inflate all of our costs, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the Nets can do it because they have the money, but I still don't respect that as much I feel like you should have discretion with everything that you spend money on.
I mean, it's kind of like, in a way, to switch gears, like, to a different sport, looking at how the Yankees do business and how maybe the Oakland A's do business. Like, it's in that position, it's easy to just spend whatever you need to spend it's hard. It's I guess more strategic to try to think your way through it and be smart about it rather than just opening up your checkbook. And I think for you, and I agree with that in some sense, like you appreciate like the strategic nature of it.
Right.
I will tell you this. Rashard Lewis, 1.2 win shares last year.
There you go.
That guy gave him a win.
So I wound up giving him a C because my basic assertion was they didn't get worse because they still have LeBron and Wade and Bosch, and they still have Battier and Allen and Haslam and Anderson. So, sure. I was like, C. They didn't get better, but they didn't get worse. They just passed.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, like, you can't know that Greg Oden's going to do anything for them, so that doesn't really affect how their summer went, right?
Right.
And even if he does something, like, let's say all my dreams come true and he becomes a 25-minute-a-game guy, and he's, like, a defensive presence and whatever, like, it doesn't change the fact that they didn't really do anything to affect themselves as of right now.
Yeah, there was no risk involved, and from the position that we're at, he does not make them any better because we have no way of asserting what he's going to do.
Yeah, I agree with the C. They didn't. I mean, they just kind of stood pat for the most part.
If you want to go from did they fill their needs, then you would give them an A because they have no needs. They're the defending two-time NBA champions with the best player on the planet.
Right. Their needs were win a title. They did that.
And by the way, I do want to kind of give this. A little bit. You can say that Wade is slipping and it's age and it had nothing to do with the knee bruise and he's falling apart and they're going to have to replace that all you want. If you're the Miami Heat organization, you don't give up on Dwayne Wade until the last breath is drawn.
Right.
You don't do anything. You stick with him for as long as it takes.
Hey, remember a couple years ago when they needed to trade LeBron for Dwight Howard because that made more sense? That was a fun month.
It seems a long time from Chokeland.
It is.
Like,
funny how a couple of titles will do that.
They lost to the Mavericks.
They did. In six games, officially.
In six games.
It's in the books. You can look it up.
So, well, there you go. So, Allen Iverson and Tracy McGrady were good. The Heat were fine, and I made a sandwich.
Yeah. Did you want to – you said something about Dwight Howard or no?
Oh, yeah. So, a report came out this weekend that Dwight Howard at the meeting told the Lakers that they need to either amnesty Kobe Bryant or, quote, muzzle him and fire D'Antoni. And the funny part to me was that everyone, all the Lakers fans, when I tweeted that out, said the same thing, which is, oh, it's totally fine for you to do, like, oh, fair enough on D'Antoni, but not about Kobe. Like, everyone's totally willing to throw him under the bus.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe's never going to be thrown under the bus with the fan base, which is fine. Like, I feel like he's done enough.
And good for them for being loyal to him.
Yeah.
I just thought it was kind of funny. I mean,
was Kobe in the Lakers? Was Kobe in the meeting when he said that? Because that would be even better.
That's what I wonder too. Like, did he wait till he's out of the room, or was he just like, you better muzzle this guy? Because I imagine not. Because I just imagine Kobe would reach across and stab him.
Yeah, Kobe would have had, like, you know, in Django Unchained where Christoph Waltz has that gun that comes out of his sleeve.
Right?
I feel like Kobe has one of those, or like a yeah. Assassin's Creed blade or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It probably was like Dwight Howard had, like, they had the meeting, and then Kobe was like, all right, I'm going to get out of here. And Dwight's like, oh, yeah, go ahead. Hey, guys, I just want to talk to you about something real quick. Kobe, have a good day. He waits to hear the chopper fly away off the roof, and he's like, by the way, D'Antoni's got to go.
This guy's got to go.
This guy needs a muzzle or to be amnesty.
I just think it's funny because I said this in the post. The reporter in question has a good reputation. He's well liked amongst the industry. This is clearly a Lakers source. Like, there's just no question that this is a Lakers source that said this. And you're going to hear probably a response from Dwight Howard's camp, whether it's tomorrow, next week, next month, or during training camp. Fagan's going to let somebody know, like, the other side of what Kobe was saying to him in that meeting. Like, something. There's going to be retribution here, and I'm going to enjoy this little feud that should not be a feud over the next, like, 5 months or so. This is going to be fun to watch, I think.
I'd love to go back to the reporting of, like, the timeline of reporting and when stuff came out during the whole Shaq-Kobe feud after Shaq was traded, because I feel like stuff was kind of leaked similarly throughout until that, like, well, maybe they were – had a Christmas Day matchup or whenever their first matchup was, that was such a big deal where like Shaq was like trying to bully Andrew Bynum and all that stuff. I feel like that I would like to see like how the reporting came out and what each story was and just go back and like go, that was the Lakers side, that was Shaq's agent, that was the Lakers side, that was Shaq's agent.
Like divide it up, yeah. See what the score is.
Yeah.
It's yeah. This is like one big game of scorched earth. That game of the tanks that throw yes. the little Charlie shells in
Holy
there.
Holy crap! We should do a counter for the website.
That's not a bad idea.
That could be something you and I can collaborate on.
I'm already thinking of ridiculously stupid ways to cover LeBron's 2014 free agency. You better be ready because there are some in next month. There's gonna be some really stupid ideas for how to cover this thing.
Oh man.
It's yeah. I would bring alcohol if I were.
I'll have the bullet on hand.
So, how dare you say that word to me? All right, so I made a sandwich today. I think that we got a lot done.
Yeah, I got to rant. You had a ham sandwich, and we talked Heat off season. Hawks yeah, tomorrow.
Right. Hawks tomorrow?
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not?
I think it's Hawks and then Wizards.
Exactly.
Thanks, Matt.